Hello and welcome to The Cryptid Catalog, a podcast for monster lovers young and old. Before we jump in, I want to mention some of the themes in today's story. Cryptid Catalog tries to cover stories in a kid-friendly manner, but every listener has a different threshold. So to make sure this story is suitable for your listeners, here are some things that you can expect to hear in today's story. Today's show contains mentions of human bones and bodies. If all of that sounds intriguing, then sit back, get a little cozy, and come with us as we open up the Cryptid Catalog. Killian, picture this. A frigid wind pushes and pulls on you as you grip your thick snow coat tighter. You wander the icy sides of a snow-capped mountain all alone. Looking for shelter from the blizzard, you stumble across the jagged mouth of a deep cave. Stepping inside, you hear a low howl escape the darkness. You pause, and just as you think it might be just the wind, you see two glowing eyes in the depths of the cave. Without warning, booming footsteps charge for you. And then, in a flash of white fur, you see a giant beast emerge. Killian, what is this creature?
Lupin!
Lupin is our dog, and he is white.
Okay. And he is huge.
He's not huge. He's a tiny dog.
Kind of huge.
No, okay.
He's this big.
What about, we're talking huge, like huger than daddy. So what monster is it? What creature is it? You know, don't make a face. Say it.
A werewolf.
Oh my God. It's the Yeti.
Ah.
So let's open up the Cryptid Catalog and find out more. Everyone, welcome to 2023, and welcome to Season 2, and welcome to Killian's birthday episode!
For some reason.
Well, we're recording this a little early.
Behind the scenes.
But Killian, how old are you about to be?
Seven,
so it's your golden birthday, you will be 7 on the 7th.
Wait, okay, now I get why we're doing... Now I get why it's... Now I
because
get
Because this episode goes up in January.
Yes.
Yeah. So, happy birthday, buddy. Happy early birthday. Aw, thanks, Bug. Okay, we also want to thank our friend Drew for suggesting the very first episode of the year, which is The Abominable Snowman or The Yeti.
Or in other words, also the movie Smallfoot.
Yes.
Which is they focused on the Yeti.
Correct. Okay. So, Killian, to start off this episode, what do you already know about the Abominable Snowman?
Well, I know that there's two movies in musicals they focused on with the Yeti in it. Well, there was Smallfoot, and there was Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and in the musical Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Right. So wait. Does the Abominable Snowman, is he white with a carrot for a nose and lumps of coal for eyes, and he sets a fire to intimidate his prey, and his arms are made of tree limbs, and he wears a very dapper hat. Is that it?
He's not like a snowman teddy okay. bear.
Oh, you're right.
Snowman teddy bear.
You're right. I think we were describing the evil version of Frosty the Snowman on accident. My bad. Yeah, maybe. So the main description of the Yeti is that they are a large ape-like humanoid that can be as much as 10 feet tall.
Brother of the Yeti.
Well,
brother of Sasquatch. Or in other words, Bigfoot.
Correct. So they are covered in thick white or gray fur and have unbelievably sharp teeth. So think of Bigfoot just taller and covered in like more snowy-esque fur.
Yeah.
So do you know what part of the world the Yeti comes from?
I know he comes from I think he comes from Antarctica, high in the mountains, and he comes from other snowy places.
So you're kind of right. Okay, so here, so the Himalayan mountain range is where he comes from.
That's what I meant by other snowy places.
Oh, okay, yeah. So the Himalayan mountain. So the Himalayan mountain range is located in Asia, and it's spanning across Bhutan, India, Nepal, China, and Pakistan. Do you know what else the Himalayan mountains have besides the Yeti? Think about it for a second. What is the ride that Mommy and Daddy ride at Disney that has the Yeti? What's the ride called? Do you remember?
Everest.
Everest. So the mountain range, it has Mount Everest, which is the tallest mountain on Earth. So, fun fact, Mount Everest is almost 5.5 miles or 8.8 kilometers tall. Kilometers.
Yeah, kilometers long. She's American.
We don't use kilometers, so I got confused for a second. So, but a lot of other countries do. So, we put it in both just to make sure everybody knows. So, the Himalayas are rocky with jagged mountain peaks, deep rushing rivers, dense forests, and of course,
caves.
Yes, and deadly snowy regions.
And of course, some booby traps.
Sure. With all that space, the Himalayan mountains look like an excellent place for a Yeti to hide out. Don't you think? Yeah.
Without the booby traps.
Well, who knows? Maybe they're setting the booby traps. We'll have to find out.
How do Yetis use booby traps? Rocks and sticks?
Yeah, rocks and sticks and stuff.
Just throwing sticks and stones?
No, you can make like booby traps out of like sticks and vines and stuff like that.
Oh, that's how they use ropes in caveman times.
Sure. So now most of the folklore revolving around the Yeti comes from the Tibetan and Sherpa people of the Himalayan mountains. I didn't know this until I researched it, but the Yeti is actually a blanket word or term for the beasts that lurk in the Himalayan mountains. So it's not just who we picture when we see the Yeti.
Josh Gates made an episode of it.
Yes, he did, Killian. Good job. Just like with most folklore, stories get simplified as they get shared with other groups. So they use the word Yeti to name like a bunch of different things.
So this is what happens with all cryptids.
Uh-huh.
So they start as like cryptids once somebody found them, and then they made them into stories.
Right.
And then they get spread around the world.
And what happens when we spread it? Some of the details get lost or added and things like that, right?
And then it turns into a tall tale.
Correct. You're absolutely correct. So that's why it's important that we research the history of our words, symbols, and folklore so that we get a more rounded understanding of the information that we are getting. So the word Yeti is used to describe three different kinds of beasts.
What?
The Nyalmo, which I'm hoping I say that right, which has gray fur and is the largest and fiercest, standing around 15 feet tall.
Demon.
So this is when we think like in our brains, when we're like Yeti and we picture in our brains, this is what we're actually probably thinking of is what the Nyalmo is. And I really hope I'm saying that right. Then there's the Chudi or Chudi, which stands around 8 feet tall. And
which
lives,
is the T and the I for Yeti.
Okay, sure. Lives 8,000 to 10,000 feet above sea level, which is crazy. And then the Rang Shim Bombo, which is a reddish brown, which has reddish brown fur and is really only 3 to 5 feet tall, which is basic 5 feet tall. Like at its tallest, it's as tall as Mommy.
Yeah.
Taller
than my mom.
Yeah. So it's about between your size and my size.
Yeah.
So
is there any of these like monsters that are like as tall as me?
Well, it's 3 feet, which is technically shorter than you, but it's 3 feet to 5 feet, so it's about your height.
Okay.
So there are several other Yeti folklore monsters, but as in every episode, this is your challenge, listeners, to do some research and find out some more, because we're only going to be able to cover a couple. So far, what do you think about the Yeti?
He's crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot of information that I didn't know, and I'm sure you didn't know either. So, are you curious where the name the Abominable Snowman came from?
Yeah.
Do you want to know?
Yeah, I am. I was thinking that they always had Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, so I think they were like, we should put the Abominable Snowman in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, because every story has to have a monster in it. Every single story has to have a bad guy or monster in it.
That's true. So way back in 1921, a British explorer named Charles Howard Berry was exploring the lower frozen regions of Mount Everest when Charles spotted some large, strange footprints. The Sherpa guides explained that the footprints must have been left behind by the Mitau Kang Mai. Mitau, loosely translated to filthy, which is a fancy word for dirty. And Kang Mai means snowman. Charles would later write about this in his book, Mount Everest, The Reconnaissance, years later, and a newspaper writer would change the name Filthy Snowman to Abominable Snowman, because he thought it sounded better. See, that's how we watch how our stories change. See, the Sherpa gave the name that they had for it. So Charles translated it from what they said, and then another writer took what Charles said and changed it again.
So it's like something's in a cauldron, and like it gets mixed up, and then it's, and then it turns into another language of the name. Like Charles said.
Yeah.
Abominable Snowman sounds better.
Oh, like the newspaper writer said, Abominable Snowman sounds, yes. So that's it. It's literally just some guy decided to write a newspaper article about Mount Everest, read Charles's book, and changed the name. I think it sounds better
Charles Dickens' book?
No, it's not Charles Dickens. But I think it sounds better as Abominable, don't you? Or do you think Filthy is better? Which one do you think? Filthy or Abominable?
Abominable, because I think that's being mean to the cryptid. Because Filthy is like...
But also, they can't help being filthy.
That's true, but they do get cleaned by snow.
Yeah, okay, wait, that's a fair point. That is a fair point, but they don't have showers and stuff like that. So let's go back even more in time to about 3,000 years ago. Early Himalayan religious groups worshipped the Yetis. They saw them as glacier beings and gods of hunting. There's artwork that depicts the Yetis as a helper to the Himalayan people, and that Yetis are around to fight evil spirits. So that's why it's bad luck to see a Yeti in person, because if you're seeing a Yeti, there must be something very evil nearby. That's interesting to think about.
Wait. So I have a connection with the Yeti.
Oh, I love it.
In Krampus.
Krampus.
There was this video that said that Krampus can drive off these evil spirits called the Perk. And the Perk are these Himalayan spirits who cause mischief.
Okay. Wow. Okay, that's cool. So Killian has been watching, there's a show on PBS called Monstrum, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Monstrum is a girl who's what is her job? She's a scientist? What is she?
She's a cryptozoologist.
She's a doctor of folklore.
That's what it is.
Her name is Dr. Emily Zarka.
Good job, buddy. And she talks about different cryptids or monsters or folklore.
She even talks about the mother of monsters.
In every episode. And Killian's been very into the Krampus episode because it is still the holiday time. And so, Killian, that was an excellent connection.
Because they both drive off evil spirits.
But if you guys want to watch the show, it's very good. It's on PBS. It's on the app. He has it on his tablet, right?
And phone.
And phone, yes. All right, so these Yeti stories have persisted, and over the past hundreds of years, there have been thousands and thousands of Yeti sightings. Pictures, videos, found footprints, and more. Now,
and even episodes of Josh Gates.
And
Josh
episodes Gates. Of Josh Gates. So now, a lot of these sightings can be debunked, which just means that they can be proven as false. Oftentimes, bears or a hoax, yes. Oftentimes, bears and orangutans wander up into the mountains and get mistaken for yetis. Sometimes, multiple footprints from wolves can kind of melt in the snow and make it look like one giant footprint that's much bigger than an actual wolf.
So wolves are like this, because wolves' paws are like small as the Grinch's heart.
No, wolves got very... Listen, do you see how big Luna and Tonks' footprints are?
Yeah.
Wolves are bigger than that. So, with all of that being said, and a little more about the history of the Yeti, are you ready to hear your story? Yes? No? Maybe so? They can't hear your head rattling?
Splatoon, yes.
Okay. So, this one is called Found Footage. What do you think about that? He's giving it a
thumbs to the side.
Thumbs to the side. Not a good thumbs up, not a thumbs down. Right in the middle. All right. Let's begin. The evidence room of the King Charles Police Department smelled like wet books and cinnamon chewing gum. A tired woman with thick brown hair walked quickly between the rows and rows of shelves, each one holding hundreds of old boxes whose labels were peeling from old age. Dim light cast shadows across the long basement walkway. The woman carried a thin bubble mailer covered in international stamps with several different languages on them. Rounding the final set of shelves, the woman screamed, dropping the bubble mailer on the floor. The head of an IT officer was dangling over the back of an office chair, twisted in an inhuman way. The man's head snapped up at the sound of the scream, and in his surprise, he slipped and fell out of the chair. Realizing that he had just been asleep, the woman let out a long sigh and kicked the bubble mailer across the floor towards the man. "You need to stop sleeping down here, Mark. You look like someone snapped your neck." Mark sat up on the floor, massaging his neck with one hand and grabbing the bubble mailer with the other. "Cynthia, when they start paying me more, I'll stop taking my naps," Mark chuckled, standing so he could fully investigate the odd package. In the dim light, the bubble mailer had scratches all over it and had a sticker on it that said it was video equipment. It rattled like it was full of metal pieces. The international stamps had several different countries on them, but the main stamp said Nepal and it had no return address. The 2 address was just made out to the police and had King Charles, Indiana on it. "Well, are you going to open it?" Cynthia asked, grabbing a piece of cinnamon gum off the cluttered desk. With a rip, the bubble mailer opened, and as Mark poured the contents out, surprise washed over his face. Inside the mailer was a smashed Canon Mark V camera. Sifting through the debris, Mark found a small metal plate etched with a name and address that he couldn't quite make out. It looked like something that had slashed through it. Picking the pieces apart, he pulled out a small tuft of gray-white fur and finally found among the bits of broken glass and twisted metal a memory card. "Cynthia, can you please ask someone upstairs to look into the name and address on this plate?" Mark asked, placing the small metal plate into Cynthia's outstretched hand. She gave him a pat on the shoulder and headed back through the dark. "Scare me like that again, and I'll leave your head like that permanently," Cynthia called out over her shoulder. Mark smiled and rolled his eyes. Sitting back down in his chair, he slid the memory card into the card reader. Moments later, an icon titled Nepal Excursion popped up on his desktop. Opening the folder, in a series of unnamed videos were listed. They were dated 6 months ago. Browsing the first few, they were all a first-person videos of several different airports, then crowded bus rides in what Mark could only imagine was Nepal, and then ice-covered mountain ranges. The video quality looked like something out of a National Geographic documentary, but the audio must have been damaged because there was no sound. There was never any talking from the camera person, just beautiful footage. He was watching as the camera person did a 360 spin, and Mark realized this person was all alone on the mountain. Just as Mark was beginning to wonder why this was sent to him in the condition it was in, he watched a clip of a long set of jagged peaks with clear blue skies. He could hear Cynthia's steps on the tile floor above him, moving towards whoever was on duty so late at night. The next clip showed a frozen sheet of ice hanging down from a cliff 30 feet above the camera person's head. Mark leaned in close to the screen, and there, in the top left of the video, was clearly a massive hand covered in gray fur. Mark paused the video and zoomed in. The hand was human-like and must have been the size of a beach ball. From overhead, Mark heard the sound of more footsteps. Looking up at the ceiling, Mark thought it was strange. There shouldn't be that many people in the station so late at night. Grabbing a piece of gum and sticking it in his mouth, Mark continued watching the clips, the cinnamon burning his tongue. In every clip, Mark saw glimpses of something that he could only imagine was a Yeti. A fur-covered elbow poking out from behind a boulder, and a set of footprints wandering towards a cave. An excited smile crept across Mark's lips. The camera person didn't know what they had been filming. Had someone really sent him footage of the legendary monster? If so, who? Why him? And then it dawned on him. If this footage made its way to him in broken, slashed pieces, then whoever the camera person is, or was, didn't make it. Searching each clip for another image of the Yeti, something slammed hard on the floor above him, sending dust falling from the rafters. Mark looked up and listened closely. There was no fighting, no talking, nothing. Did he imagine it? Then he heard footsteps upstairs. Mark turned back to the computer. Only two videos left. The first showed the camera person stepping towards a dark cave and turning on their camera light. Venturing into the cave, the camera person scanned the darkness. Simple cave paintings were lining the walls. Stick figure people painted in a deep red color. Mark was inches from the screen, fully engrossed in the video. There was no sound, but something made the camera person start running, charging deeper into the cave. The video suddenly stopped. Mark selected the final video. The video bobbed up and down frantically as the camera person ran. Mark saw what looked like hundreds of human bones, shredded winter weather gear, and frozen corpses piled up on the sides of the icy cave. The camera swung hard and rolled down the side of the wall, landing in the remains of an old expedition backpack. The camera recorded a person in bright orange snow gear stumbling and falling backwards. Stepping into the frame was a figure that was unmistakably a Yeti. Mark watched as the Yeti lifted its massive hand and slashed down, colliding with the camera person and sending him flying out of the view of the camera. The Yeti stepped towards the light and bent down, its face peering down at the camera. Mark paused the video. He was mesmerized by the human-like creature with thick, bushy eyebrows, golden eyes, and jagged, hungry teeth. "Excuse me, Mr. Mark Cole," a raspy voice said from the shelves. Mark spun around in his chair, pulling himself away from the paused image of the Yeti, who was just moments away from ending the camera person. "Who's there?" Mark croaked out in the evidence room. The words hung in the air for a moment before two people in black suits stepped out from the set of shelves. One was a tall black man with long, corkscrew coiled hair, and his partner was an Asian woman, her white hair trimmed in a bowl cut that hung over her eyes. "Can I help you?" Mark said, quickly turning back and minimizing the image of the Yeti. "Mr. Cole, I believe you have in your possession a sensitive set of videos that were mistakenly addressed to you." The woman's raspy voice eked out as she and her partner stepped towards Mark and the computer. "I'm not sure what you're talking about," Mark said, suddenly realizing that he was sweating. "This doesn't have to be complicated, Mr. Cole. Please give us the contents of the bubble mailer and the SD card and we'll be on our way," the man said, stepping up beside Mark. "Who are you? FBI or something?" Mark said. Whatever was happening, Mark knew it wasn't good. A crooked smile swept across the woman's face as she shook her head. I really think I should hold on to this, especially since you're not giving me any real reason to hand it over, Mark said, watching the woman reach her hand into her suit pocket. I don't know why you wanted to try and see if he would just give us the SD card. They never cooperate, the man said, laughing. Mark was frozen in confused fear as he watched the woman pull out a small silver pen and hold it out in front of her. It's always fun to try, she said. Then a bright red light burst from the pen. Mark sat at his desk alone with a taste of cinnamon gum still in his mouth, but he didn't remember chewing any. The computer screen illuminated the room with its empty desktop background and some snow-capped mountain ranges. Mark rubbed his eyes. His shift was almost over. He hung his head back on the back of his chair and closed his eyes. He couldn't quite help but feel like he'd forgotten something really important, but a nap did sound nice, and he was sure Cynthia had already gone home. The end. What do you think happened?
I think that, he wouldn't hand it over because he still had his research, because he still needed to finish his research.
Yeah, but then what happened? He saw that bright light and then he couldn't remember anything. What do you think those people did?
He brainwashed them.
They brainwashed him or they erased his memory?
How they erase his memory?
Oh, I don't know. I have a feeling we'll see these people again. Do you think?
Mm-hmm.
I think Daddy's creating a long-term story here.
I think it's chapter two next.
All right. So what are your thoughts? Do you have any more questions or thoughts or anything else you want to say about the Yeti before we say goodbye?
No.
No? You don't have anything else to say?
I'm wishing everybody who has a birthday in this month, I'm wishing them a happy birthday.
That was very kind.
And Merry Christmas to all and to all a good night.
And happy holidays.
And happy holidays.
And happy holidays. And I want to say one more thank you to Drew, who suggested today's story. So Drew, it was a very good suggestion, and I hope you enjoyed that we started season two with your monster pick or your cryptid kit pick. Mm-hmm. Cryptid pick. All right. Anything else?
No.
All right. Well, that is all we have for you. I am Karina.
I'm Killian.
And this is
Dylan B. Masterfer.
Daddy. Yep. And this has been
The Cryptid Catalog.
Until next time, remember,
the cryptids are watching.
Thank you for listening to The Cryptid Catalog. This show is hosted by Karina and Killian B. Masterfer. Written, researched, and edited by Dylan B. Masterfer. And the music was created and performed by Will Shelton. Grown-ups, if you would like to help support the show, please take a second to finish out the episode and listen to some ads.